Chapter 1. May 1952, Brighton, England. Anthea Clark. Anthea Clark did not approve. In the absence of the venerable Edwin Champion, recovering from a bout of pneumonia, the law office was in the unreliable hands of Toby Whitby. And in Anthea's opinion, Mr. Whitby was too young, too flighty, and too impetuous for such responsibility. She took the precaution of opening the window in Mr. Champion's office, hoping that the cold air blowing in from the English Channel would discourage Toby from sitting at Mr. Champion's desk. The thought of him scattering papers willy-nilly, leaving law books unshelved, and actually putting his feet up on the desk was more than she could tolerate, especially on this brisk spring morning when she had already received a dreadful shock along with her morning tea. She returned to her contemplation of the police notice that had arrived in the morning mail. The victim's facial features had been blurred by immersion in the ocean, but she had recognized the face immediately. Now she awaited Toby Whitby's arrival so that she could ask him to relieve her of her duties long enough to go down to the Brighton mortuary and tell them what she knew. She had telephoned the officer in charge of the investigation a half hour ago to let him know that she was coming, and now she would be late. The door of the outer office opened, and Toby blew in along with a gust of sea air. His brown curly hair, always in need of barbering, stood out like a halo around his head, and his cheeks were reddened by the wind. He grinned at her as he shed his outer garments and removed his glasses to polish them with a handkerchief. Toby was in love, and his moods were governed by the arrival or non-arrival of correspondence from his beloved. Today he seemed to be in a good mood. No doubt he had received a letter or even a phone call. Anthea, who had long ago given up on the idea of finding her own romance, wished that Carol Elliott would make up her mind, marry Toby or don't marry him, but put a stop to this eternal indecision and the breaking and repairing of Toby's heart. "Morning, Miss Clark."
"Good morning, Mr. Whitby."
On one momentous occasion, just a few months before, she had actually called him Toby, but that was in the height of excitement and relief on finding him alive after an especially hair-raising adventure. Now that he was running the office on behalf of Mr. Champion, he was, of course, to be addressed as Mr. Whitby. But in her own mind, he would always be Toby, and her feelings would always be a puzzling mixture of admiration and exasperation. Toby looked at the morning mail spread across Anthea's desk.
"Anything interesting?"
"A police notice sent to local solicitors and business owners about a body washed up on the beach." She took a deep breath. "The body is not in good condition. They did not wish to publish the picture in the newspaper for fear of upsetting people." Toby laughed derisively. "Huh, as if we have not all seen more than our fair share of bodies."
"The children," Anthea said mildly. "We have a new generation born since the war. They have been spared the sights we have seen."
Toby replaced his glasses and picked up the paper. He studied the photograph.
"If he served in the forces, his fingerprints will be on file. It's just a matter of time. Someone will know who he is."
"I know already," Anthea declared. Toby raised his eyebrows. His grey eyes, magnified by the strong lenses of his glasses, were alight with curiosity.
"Really?"
He stared down at the grainy photograph.
"Not much to go on. Are you sure?"
"Quite sure. I never forget a face."
Toby tapped the illustration with a dubious finger.
"Not much face left."
"I know who he is," Anthea insisted.
Toby moved around behind Anthea's desk and read the words printed beneath the picture.
"Foul play suspected."
He grinned in a mischievous way, totally unsuited to the dignity of an employee of Champion & Company.
"Foul play suspected? Do they still speak like that? It sounds like something out of a crime novel."
"I don't read crime novels," Anthea replied,
hoping that he would hear the rebuke in her voice. "There must be something they're not telling us if they're talking about foul play," Toby said thoughtfully. "It has to be more than just the bad condition of the body. I've seen for myself what a body looks like after it's been dragged along the ocean floor. There's a lot of scrap metal down there. It's still not safe to go swimming." Toby returned his attention to the picture. "Do you really know him?"
"I wouldn't say I know him, but I know who he is. It's a face I could never forget."
She returned Toby's speculative look with a discouraging glare.
"You have a vivid imagination, Mr. Whitby, but this is not the time or place for that kind of speculation."
Toby grinned. "I would not dream of speculating. So, tell me who he is."
"He is, or was, a lieutenant in the Royal East Kent Regiment. And he saved my life."
Toby's look invited her to offer more information, but Anthea was in too much of a hurry. She was late, and she hated to be late. She also hated to repeat herself. It would be enough to tell the story once to the officer in charge of the inquiry into the lieutenant's death. Toby was blessedly silent for a moment. When he spoke, she sensed the sympathy in his voice.
"Painful memory?" he asked.
Anthea thought back on her life, on two world wars and a fiancé lost so long ago that his existence had become irrelevant. She had trouble thinking of any memory that was not painful.
"No, not really."
Toby folded the paper and put it in his pocket.
"We have no appointments this morning. I'll come with you, and we can take my car. It's blowing half a gale out there. No point in you getting your hair untidy."
Anthea patted her grey bun to reassure herself that no hairpins had been misplaced. She looked at Toby's rambunctious curls and smiled. Despite his youth and his complete indifference to protocol, she could not help liking him. In fact, if she had been 40 years younger, she would not be hesitating at his proposal and keeping him waiting for an answer the way that Carol Elliott was keeping him waiting. Brighton Mortuary, Detective Inspector Percy Slater. Percy Slater waited in the outer office of the mortuary, wrinkling his nose at the all-pervading odour of formalin and detal. In a strange way, he was looking forward to being reunited with Miss Anthea Clark from the offices of Champion and Company. She'd done really well in the Southwold case. She had managed to keep a cool head while Southwold Hall was being blown to smithereens and her boss was accusing the lady of the manor of murder. He'd be pleased to see her again, and if she really had a good line on the identity of the body washed up on Brighton Beach, he'd be glad to hear it. The door opened, and he saw that Miss Clark was not alone. Toby Whitby hovered behind her, his eyes hidden by fog spectacles. As the fog dissipated, Slater was greeted with Whitby's cheerful smile of recognition.
"Sergeant Slater!"
"Inspector Slater."
"A promotion! Oh, congratulations!"
Toby extended his hand, and Slater felt the usual discomfort at only being able to offer his left hand in greeting. He had left his right arm in Normandy. He was unable to shake hands as any normal person would shake hands, but at least he was still working, still solving crimes, still reading the telltale signs that separated accidental death from cold, premeditated murder. At least he was not dead. Slater addressed his remarks to Miss Clark. She was the one who had made the appointment.
"There was no need to bring your lawyer, Miss Clark. We don't suspect foul play on your part."
"Miss Clark is only here to assist in identification," Toby said. "Nothing else."
Then let's get on with it," Slater said, anxious to be back in the open air and away from the smell of death. "We've put him in the viewing room. No need to look at the entire body, Miss Clark, just the face."
Miss Clark nodded and unexpectedly reached for Toby's arm, as if she needed his help to remain upright. Now Slater was truly curious. What was Miss Clark's relationship to the deceased? Slater opened the door and entered the viewing room, where the odour of death, decay, and seaweed had easily overcome the smell of formalin.
He closed the door behind him, isolating the viewers from the more unpleasant odours, and opened the curtains on the viewing window. He folded back the green sheet and revealed the victim's battered face. Miss Clark's face, seen through the small window, revealed nothing but impatience. She shook her head, muttered something to Toby, and the next minute the door had opened and Miss Clark, still grasping Toby's arm, was standing next to the body.
"Oh, Miss Clark, there's no need," Slater protested.
"I can't see anything from there," Miss Clark replied. "I'm sure you mean well, Inspector, but I'm not afraid of death. I was in London, in the Blitz, and you know what that was like." She fumbled in the pocket of her tweed skirt and produced a pair of glasses. With the spectacles perched on the tip of her aquiline nose, she stared down at the face for a long, silent moment. Her expression behind the magnifying lenses was unreadable. She didn't lean in, yearning toward the body as Slater had seen parents and lovers lean. Neither did she draw back as some did when faced with horrific injuries. She stood silent and still, as if in respectful remembrance. At long last, she returned her spectacles to her pocket and stepped away. "I know who he is. His name is Michael Cheviot. He was a lieutenant in the Royal East Kent Regiment. Now you have a name, I assume you can check his fingerprints." Slater hoped that his sharp intake of breath would not betray him. A member of the Cheviot family? Surely not. But Miss Clark seemed very sure of herself. He saw Toby looking at him, wondering. Yes, the lawyer had heard his sudden gasp and had tucked it away for use at some future opportunity. He had let down his guard and now he felt an unreasonable spike of annoyance as Toby offered a suggestion. "I expect his regiment has his fingerprints on file." Slater scowled. He did not need Toby to tell him how to do his job. "I'm afraid that's not going to help," he said through gritted teeth. "But if you check the fingerprints..." "I can't check his bloody fingerprints."
"Why not?"
Irritation took the place of common sense, and Slater grabbed the corner of the sheet. With a quick jerk, he pulled the covering away to reveal the victim's bloated body and the arms ending in neatly severed stumps. "No fingers," he said. Miss Clark gave a faint cry and crumpled toward the floor. Anthea Clark. The detective was apologetic. She thought he would be impatient at her weakness, but he had made efficient use of his one remaining arm and caught her as she slid toward the floor. She'd been surprised by his strength. With his grey-streaked hair and dour expression, she had thought of him as middle-aged. But the arm that caught her had the strength of a much younger man. Perhaps the lines on his face and the hurt behind his eyes were the result of the sights he was forced to witness every day. Maybe he was not old. Maybe he was simply tired. Now the three of them sat together in the police canteen while Anthea drank strong, sweet tea and Toby asked her over and over again if she was quite sure she had not banged her head. "No, Mr. Whitby, my head is perfectly fine. Inspector Slater was kind enough to catch me before I came into contact with the floor." She turned her head to look at the police officer. "I am so sorry." "My fault," the inspector replied. Anthea shook her head. "You did what you had to do so that Mr. Whitby would stop talking about fingerprints and understand the importance of my identifying the body. There is no need to apologize. I really don't know what came over me." The policeman sighed. "Death is always disturbing." He looked at Toby. He seemed to be making an attempt at friendliness. "He knows what I mean. We've seen things we can't forget." Anthea refused to look at Toby. She knew he was sensitive about the fact that he had never been in combat. His poor eyesight had kept him out of uniform, but he had done sterling work as a fire watcher on the roof of the Ministry of Defence. As for Slater, quite obviously something catastrophic had happened to him, although he chose not to acknowledge it.
It was, she thought, as though no one should be permitted to notice his missing right arm. The thought of Slater's right arm brought her mind back to the severed stumps of Michael Cheviot's arms. It was the lack of blood that had upset her. The pale unreality of the flesh-nibbled extremities and the clean-cut white bone buried in the swollen and putrefied flesh, and not a drop of blood in sight. "Miss Clark, I have asked one of the WPCs to bring us the file on Michael Cheviot," Slater said. Anthea sipped her tea and tried to ignore the look of sympathetic disbelief on the detective's face. "I don't know why you should doubt me, Inspector. I know it's him."
"Did you know him well?" Slater asked.
Anthea knew that the question was a reasonable one. She was insisting that she knew the identity of the battered corpse, and without the benefit of fingerprints, Slater had nothing else to go on. Of course, she should tell him what she knew. She glanced at Toby. She could hardly ask him to leave. He leaned forward and listened intently to her story.